I am not one who subscribes to the idea of a second incursion. And when I what I mean by second incursion is that there was another Genesis 6 type advent post flood. In other words, another group of angels descended to the earth in a post flood context and committed the same trespasses as the watchers in the pre-flood world. I don't completely rule out the possibility of such a scenario, but it's unlikely in my mind for several reasons. So I believe that that kind of transgression, something akin to that, will happen again at the end of the age, and it will be, that will truly be the second incursion. And there's a lot of dispute out there concerning how the offspring of the watchers made it from, made it through the flood.
Right. Yeah, that's something I've been wondering about too. And I know there's a couple popular theories. I have no clue. What are your thoughts? Like Numbers 13:33 says, yeah.
As far as I can tell, there's four possible contingencies.
Okay.
Let's see if I can remember them. The first one is a second incursion. In other words, it happened again, and angels fell again. They descended to the earth. They took wives among the children of men in a post-flood context. They copulated with these women, and they produced another race of giants. That, to me, is the most unlikely for several reasons. And I'll explain that after I cite the other three contingencies. The second contingency would be that the genetic trademarks of the offspring of the watchers, the Nephilimic races, made it through the flood via the genomes of the offspring of Noah, or specifically through their wives. Through the wives of Noah's three sons, one of the wives. That's plausible. I don't necessarily subscribe to that, but I can't rule it out either.
Right.
Just as I can't rule out the contingency of a second incursion, although I would put that at the bottom of the list. The two contingencies that I think are most plausible are what I would call the necromancy contingency, which is something that Tom Horn really brought to the forefront when he pointed out that Nimrod began to be a mighty one in the earth. And you can interpret that he began to be a giant, or at the very least that he began to undergo some kind of a genetic transmutation and began to become something other than human. The reason why that transmutation began to occur, if it did indeed begin to occur at all, is unknown. But we can speculate that there was some kind of perhaps necromancy involved, perhaps a reconjuring of the spirits of the Rephaim, of the Nephilimic entities that had perished during the flood. So it would be some kind of sorcery.
Mm-hmm.
Some kind of necromancy that would be involved, perhaps perhaps involving the Tower of Babel affair. We know that, you know, you had the Sumerians who were attempting to open the gates to the Abzu, to the abyss, and perhaps achieve that endeavor. And so I don't know. It's very misty when you look back at the first civilization, the Sumerians. You look back at the Tower of Babel affair, and you look back at Nimrod. It's very ambiguous. We don't really know a whole lot. We know, what we do know is that what was happening in the days of Nimrod was insurrection. That much we know. Nimrod's name means rebel, or to rebel, or we shall rebel. So what marks the advent of the Tower of Babel is insurrection, rebellion. Does that rebellion have something to do with reconjuring these forbidden entities, or trying to bring down entities that were akin to the Watchers, perhaps, or another group of Watchers trying to make contact with non-human entities in other realms. We can speculate that that could have been the case, and I think that there are strong indications that that is, in fact, what was happening with the Tower of Babel. But again, we can only conjecture.
Right.
So that would be the third contingency, in my mind, much more plausible than the other two. But I have a fourth contingency that I think personally is the most plausible because it's the most practical.
Mm-hmm.
Not many people subscribe to this one. In fact, I hadn't ever heard anyone suggest it before I made a video where I suggest that. Somebody made it through. Somebody survived the flood. Something, we should say, survived the flood.
Right.
Either by going off planet or by going into the interior of the planet. I call this contingency the Exiles of Atlantis.
Okay.
And the reason why I believe that this is the most plausible, certainly the most practical scenario, is because if you consult with the myth and legend of the myths and legends of antiquity concerning this great civilization that was destroyed, the antediluvian civilization, this empire, what I call the empire of the gods that existed in the world before the flood, you will find a common thread in all of these different legends that seems to suggest that somebody made it through. Somebody escaped with some of the knowledge, apart from Noah and his family. And of course, the different legends will record different details concerning the advent of the great cataclysm that destroyed the empire of the gods. For example, the Sumerians name a different individual that's very analogous to Noah and the story of Noah, saving the two of every kind of the different animals and the species and so forth. Whereas other legends won't necessarily contain those specific details, but will have a storyline that is similar.
Mm-hmm.
But in many of these accounts, you have somebody surviving by way of divine providence, but then you have almost this concurrent narrative of not somebody necessarily surviving, but somebody escaping. And there are several accounts where that becomes vivid. And you even find indications that somebody escaped into the interior of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And again, when I say somebody, something, I'm not referencing Noah. Obviously, Noah made it through the flood by way of the ark and divine providence and divine protection. But then there's this other concurrent narrative of something escaping the flood, not necessarily surviving by providence, but escaping.
Mm-hmm.
And you can trace this thread through the myths and legends of antiquity, and especially as they relate to the mystery schools. Knowledge made it through the flood to the other side, into the post-flood context, by a surreptitious means. So either, again, somebody went off-world, off-planet, or went into the interior of the planet and was able to thereby escape annihilation. Now, there would be contention from the Christian community, certainly, of the notion of something or somebody escaping, because the Bible clearly says that all the creatures that God had made, the air-breathing creatures,
mm-hmm.
the land-based creatures, were destroyed.
Right.
But there's no indication that the sea creatures were killed, for one thing. And for another thing, we're talking about entities, and this may be parsing terms here, but this may be splitting hairs, but we're talking about entities that God had made,
mm-hmm.
that God had designed to be in the earth. But we know, because of the Genesis 6 affair, that there were a lot of what I call unsanctioned entities in the earth that were not that did not come about as a result of the providence of God. These were unsanctioned entities. Their existence was prohibited, but they nevertheless came into being through the miscegenation of the Watchers, their copulation with human women, and these would have been very advanced entities. These were not the offspring of Adam, and these were not merely beasts of the earth. These were hybrids, and they would have had very advanced minds, and perhaps been wielding very advanced technology that was given to them, or at the very least taught to them, according to the Book of Enoch, by their fathers, the Watchers.
Right.
And so, might they have had the technology to survive the flood to some degree, or at least some of them? And I think that the answer is yes. I think that they might have had that kind of technology. So either way, all four contingencies infer a couple of things. Mm-hmm. They infer that somehow the genetic line persisted into the post-flood world. The genetic line of the Watchers persisted. That's established. We know that's true, and we don't have to make that case because it's self-evident. But it also infers that no matter how you dice it, God allowed that persistence, the persistence of that genetic line into a post-flood context. So I've heard the argument that that the genetic trademarks of the Watchers could not possibly have been communicated through the flood via the genomes of Noah's offspring, because that would make God incompetent. But the fallacy of that argument is that you could make the same argument for any of the four contingencies.
Yeah, it survived somehow.
Yeah, the fact is that the genetic line was present again in the post-flood world. So somehow they reemerged. And I don't believe that that speaks to God being incompetent. I think that what we have is a persistent insurgency against God that is continually active against him, this rebellion that is continually in engaging in insubordination against the Maker. And by some way, through some mechanism, was able to propagate itself in the post-flood context. Mm-hmm. One of those, either by one of those four contingencies, or perhaps by some other contingency that we've not even considered. And maybe there are some other ideas out there that I'm not aware of, but those are certainly the four, in my mind, the four most prominent possibilities of how the Nephilim, for lack of a better term, made it through the flood. So, you know, it doesn't matter to me necessarily how they made it through the flood. The fact is they did. Mm-hmm. So it's important to identify the implications of the hybrid race in a post-flood context, especially as it relates to the end of the age, and being able to differentiate between the post-flood incursion of not necessarily another incursion of fallen angels, but certainly the post-flood incursion of their offspring, mm-hmm. and a final Genesis 6 type event that is going to reoccur in the earth at the end of the age.
You can help fight against censorship by making a one-time donation or setting up a monthly donation to Josh Peck Disclosure at joshpeckdisclosure.com/donate. Or, for as little as $1 a month, you can become a Peck patron by heading over to patreon.com/joshpeck. As a Peck patron, you will be entered into contests to have your content featured on the Josh Peck Disclosure homepage, contribute chapters to a collaborative book with Josh Peck, and win a special Josh Peck collection full of materials worth hundreds of dollars. Also, for as little as $3 a month, you will have access to free downloads of Josh Peck books, such as Quantum Creation, Cherubim Chariots, and more. Josh Peck Disclosure is viewer-funded. Head on over to joshpeckdisclosure.com for more information. Right now, head on over to joshpeckdisclosure.com, the central hub for everything Josh Peck Disclosure. Every day, you'll get brand new videos, podcasts, updates, and more. Make sure you subscribe at youtube.com/joshpeckdisclosure. Also, make sure you click the bell and select the option to always be notified when a new video is released. Follow Josh Peck Disclosure on Twitter at jpdisclosure and get involved with the show on our official Facebook page at facebook.com/joshpeckdisclosure. Disclosure. If you're on Steemit and prefer DTube, follow Josh Peck at steemit.com/@Josh Peck and make sure to upvote all Josh Peck Disclosure DTube videos. Keep checking back at joshpeckdisclosure.com for news, information, updates, and more.